This is the daily radio ministry of Pastor Sandy Adams of Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain in Atlanta, Georgia. Pastor Sandy is currently teaching through the book of 1 Corinthians. Now, here's Pastor Sandy in 1 Corinthians chapter 7 as he continues his message, Single and Legit.
In verse 29, he says that another reason not to marry is we're running out of time. He says, but this I say, brethren, the time is short, so that from now on, even those who have wives should be as though they had none. Those who weep as though they did not weep. Those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice. Those who buy as though they did not possess. And those who use this world as not misusing it, for the form of this world is passing away. Paul contends that the time is short. Now, obviously, he believed that Jesus was coming at any moment. And every generation of believers since the first century onward should live their lives on earth under this assumption. Prophetically speaking, nothing needs to happen before Jesus returns as a thief in the night to whisk away his church. Never forget, our snatching away is imminent. It can happen at any moment, even today. And this is how Paul lived his life. He streamlined his concerns so that his only care was Christ and people. And he encourages married Christians to do the same. He says those who have wives should be as though they had none. And some of you guys read that verse and you think, free at last! I have found my favorite verse. I'm playing golf every day this week and going deer hunting next weekend. Whoa now, hold your horses, big fella. That's not what it means. Paul is in no way suggesting that a married person can abandon their family and their marital responsibilities. You know, I've known even some pastors who use their commitment to Christ as an excuse for neglecting their families. This is not what Paul is advocating here. And perhaps more so, I've seen married people use their marriage and family as an excuse for neglecting their commitment to God and to their church. It seems young couples can get so wrapped up in themselves and in their kids and in all their kids do that they put their church and their service to God on the back burner. Paul says, don't do that. If you're married, if you have a wife, live as though you had none. Still be committed to Christ. Don't let your family come between you and your service for God. We need to think about it. Do we really think that getting a child to a 12-year-old baseball game is more important than our church and the ministry that God has called us to? What are we teaching our kids about the proper priorities? Kathy and I, we raised 4 kids and we gave them tons of opportunities, but there were limits. God came first. Church was a given in our home. And not because I was the pastor. We honored God with our weekly worship. Our kids knew that their family was part of something greater than themselves. The Adams family exists to serve God. God doesn't exist just to better our family. Christians should never stop loving and serving our spouse and kids. But neither should we worship them. You know, you can turn your family into an idol. I know some parents who worship their kids. Some Christian couples are so busy providing for each other and their children that they never make a sacrifice for anybody else. Some Christians focus on the family too much. I've witnessed couples who were dating while attending our church, perhaps even met at our church, but the moment they married, we never saw them again. Or once their kids started signing up for stuff, they disappeared. The point of marriage is to serve the Lord together. The goal of every family should be to glorify God. And here Paul is saying, when it comes to serving God, believers who have a family shouldn't be any less diligent toward the things of God than the believer who doesn't. Paul goes on to say, in that same way that you shouldn't let your life be dominated by family concerns, neither should you get bogged down by emotions. He says those who weep should be as though they did not weep, and those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice. Emotions can overwhelm us. Sorrow, even gladness, can bog us down. In life, we go through seasons of intense emotions that either shut down our caring or snuff out our usefulness. Christians can get distracted and bogged down by our moods and our feelings and even some depression. In 2013, Nick Saban and his Alabama football, I hate using this guy as an illustration, but it just works. Nick Saban and Alabama, they beat Notre Dame 42-14 for the national title. It was Alabama's second national championship in as many seasons. Well, when the game was over, sportscaster Tom Rinaldi stuck a microphone right in Nick's face. And he asked the coach how long he planned to enjoy this victory. Saban said, "Well, 2 days and we're going to start on next year. We've got a 24-hour rule around here, but I'm proud of these guys, man. I'm happy for them." Given back-to-back national championships? How nice is it for old Coach Nick to stretch his one-day rule and actually give his boys 48 hours to enjoy their victory? What a softy. Yet Paul had the same down-to-business attitude towards serving God. When he won victories, Paul gave himself a little time to revel in them, but he would agree with the quote, "We'll have all eternity to celebrate our victories, but just a few short days to win them." Paul didn't get bogged down in his victories. Neither did he get overwhelmed by his defeats. He felt the same way about his sorrows. He had no time to refill his victory mug, and he had no time to cry over spilt milk. Paul would tell you, dry your tears. Stop your cheers. The battle isn't over. There's more to be done. And Paul wasn't about to let his zeal get snuffed out by material stuff. Notice what he adds. He says, "And those who buy should be as though they did not possess." Paul would tell you, possessions are fine just as long as they don't possess you. Everybody needs some stuff to get by in this life. You probably need a car and a house and a refrigerator maybe. Just don't fall in love with your fridge. Just don't spend endless hours sitting there looking at your refrigerator. Maybe a better illustration would be a TV. But Paul's point is that time is short, so use it wisely. Have you seen the ticker watch? After inputting your data, it estimates your life expectancy, so that whenever you check to see what time it is, it reminds you of how many years and months and days and hours and minutes and seconds you have left to live. Here's the ticker motto: every moment counts. You'd think a constant reminder of your demise would get depressing, but its inventor, Frederick Colton, who, by the way, was once a grave digger, he calls it the happiness watch. He believes that watching your life tick away should remind you to enjoy and to savor every single second you've been given. I believe the Apostle Paul would have probably worn a ticker. And then he writes in verse 32, "But I want you to be without care, for he who is unmarried cares for the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But he who is married cares about the things of the world, how he may please his wife." In other words, a single person is free from the present distress, but he's also free from earthly distractions, even family distractions. Think back before Tiger Woods was married. Think of Tiger prior to his infamous womanizing, back before that. Think of Tiger Woods when we all just thought of the young man as a truly great golfer. Well, in 2002, I read an interview with Tiger's dad, Earl Woods, about his son's abilities, about his prospects for success in golf. Earl made what was at the time a controversial statement. He commented, he said, "I don't see Tiger marrying before 30, if then, because he has a lot to accomplish in the game of golf. And let's face it, a wife can sometimes be a deterrent to a good game of golf. The level Tiger's at, the finite little problems like that would destroy him." Well, I hate to say it, but Daddy Earl was right. Tiger's sin became public knowledge, his marriage unraveled, and he's never been the same golfer since. As every married man who enjoys a game of golf more than checking off lists on his honey-do list will tell you, a wife can sometimes be a deterrent to a good game of golf. Here, old Earl sounds like the Apostle Paul. A married man has a tough time concentrating. He has a tough time keeping his focus on God or on his golf game because he's also attending to the needs of his wife and his kids. If you've heard the story before, just ignore it, but it fits the context here. I need to tell it again. I was once officiating a wedding. It was a big ceremony. Place was packed. I was in this very spot I'm standing in now. The sanctuary was full of people, packed to the gills. The couple who was getting married had made it to the altar. And that's when yours truly opened his mouth. Old Pastor Sandy, he was supposed to say, just as the wife compliments her husband. But those were not the words that came out of his mouth. Instead, I said, just as the wife complicates the husband. Hey, condemn me for inappropriate timing, but not for untruthfulness. For here Paul agrees, marriage will complicate a man's life. I mean, when a man gets married, suddenly he has double the trouble. Two sets of car repairs. Two tanks to fill up. Two insurance premiums to pay. Two birthdays to remember. Two opinions to sort through. Two demands on his time. Trust me, if I wasn't married, I would never hang Christmas lights. Read my lips, never. Think of the money I would save not writing checks to the nail gallery. I would never have to purchase another tube of lipstick or have to call home when I was running late. I could spend all my time serving the Lord and witnessing to people on the golf course if I wanted. These last few days, Kathy went to Columbus to see Natalie and the grandbabies, and she was been gone for the last 3 days. She just got back this morning. But I got to say, while she was gone, I got so much work done. I got a ton of work done. On top of that, I watched the Hawks and I played a round of golf. I don't know what it is, but without a wife around, my life becomes more focused, more streamlined. I get more done. You know, I park in Kathy's spot, which is about, I don't have to walk 15 minutes to get to the house. I park in her spot. It's right there next to the house. While she's gone, I don't have to shave. I don't have to brush my teeth. I don't bathe. I certainly don't do any dishes. I work in the living room. Now, don't get me wrong. After a few days, I start to miss her. I want her back. My focus isn't worth her absence. But when she's gone, it always reminds me just how much a married man cares for the things of this world. You know, before I got married, I thought that I was an unselfish guy. I'd go out on a date. I'd be on my best behavior. I'd put my best unselfish foot forward. Then I'd come home and I'd unwind exactly the way I wanted for as long as I wanted. Then I got married. And I immediately realized this was the date that would never end. I was always expected to be on my best behavior. I never got to fully unwind. I started to learn what it meant to really be unselfish. And then one kid came along. And then another. Make it three, even four. And with each kid, my unselfishness stretched. My capacity for unselfishness increased. I've learned how true it is. He who is married cares about the things of the world, how he may please his wife. That's a good thing. Marriage teaches selfish people how to please others, but it also restricts a person's spontaneity and autonomy and their freedom. Verse 34 puts it, there is a difference between a wife and a virgin, or that is a single person. The unmarried woman cares about the things of the Lord. She may be holy, both in body and in spirit. She doesn't have a husband to worry about. This gobbles up a lot of her time, having to deal with this man every day. A single gal doesn't have to follow a husband. She's free to serve the Lord. She's just to be holy to the Lord. In body and in spirit. I mean, she wants to wear sweats around the house. She doesn't worry about getting spruced up or look nice for her husband. She doesn't have to worry about any of that. She can wear her grungies all the time. Never had to do her hair. She has a little bit more freedom. She's not worried about what the man might think of her appearance, nor about ministering to his fleshly needs. Her focus is on the Lord and his will for her life. She's just free to be devoted to the Lord. There's a lot of freedom there. Think about it. A married woman is like she's in a three-legged race with a clumsy husband who's stepping on her toes all the time, while a single lady's life is a beautiful dance with Jesus himself. In contrast to the bliss of singleness, Paul sums up the life of a Mrs. But she who is married cares about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. I mean, a wife's chief concern is pleasing her husband. And I'm sure every husband here this morning would testify that, yeah, that's my wife's big concern. She's always worried about how she can please me. That's Might be what it seems. Well, I'm sure that's the idea. Well, then Paul adds, verse 35, and this being the legitimacy of singleness. He says, I say for your own profit, not that I may put a leash on you, but for what is proper, and that you may serve the Lord without distraction. Now, in Ephesians chapter 5, Paul depicts marriage as a beautiful love story. He gets quite romantic. Here, though, Paul isn't quite as romantic. If you're single, beware. If you choose to marry, just know what you're getting into. But in verse 35, Paul's picture of marriage is not so flattering. He says marriage is a leash. It's a dog collar that curtails your freedom. Now, that's a bit harsh, but that's his point. Marriage is going to limit a person's autonomy. A married person is accountable for his time and his whereabouts and his behavior and his attitude, not just to God, but to another human being. Married people need to realize this. I know guys that resent this. No, this is what you signed up for. This is what marriage is about. There's a reason we call marriage getting hitched. As one author puts it, I didn't know what happiness was until I got married, but by then it was too late. It's just a joke. It's just a joke. Hey, I am very happily married. I have a wife who trusts me, who lets me follow the Lord and even play golf from time to time. But I realize that marriage is a trade-off. Kathy and I have swapped some freedom and independence for some trust and some companionship. I'm not as free as I would be if I were single, and that is appropriate. I can't just up and take a job in another state for a few months. I can't stay out all night without explaining why. I can't just take money out of the account and spend it on myself or be late without a notification of some sort. Even my desires to serve the Lord have to be balanced with the needs of my family. Neither spouse should act independently of the other. Married folks are no longer playing singles, but doubles. We're a team. If you ever played tennis, you know the difference between singles and doubles. In doubles tennis, you don't have to run as much. That's a good thing. You can cover more of the court. There's more strategy in the doubles game. But I always hated playing doubles. There's some disadvantages to playing doubles. Why should I be penalized for my partner's mistakes? And when you have a partner, you got to learn to think alike and cooperate and work together. It's just a lot simpler. There's just less worries playing singles. This is what Paul is saying about marriage. We're all Christians. We are tennis players, so to speak. We're called to serve. We all start with love. We're all playing tennis, but has God called you to be a singles player or a doubles player? Both have their advantages and their disadvantages. Well, Paul has more questions to answer in verse 36. Here he seems to no longer be addressing his comments to the virgin or to the single person, but to the virgin's father. He says, but if any man thinks he is behaving improperly toward his virgin, if she is past the flower of youth, and thus it must be, let him do what he wishes. He does not sin, let them marry. Now, in ancient culture, in fact, even in many non-Western cultures today, the father or the patriarch of the family had a say in the marriage of his children. Now, when I was young, when I was a single man, this was a concept that I could never wrap my brain around. I thought this was so strange. I mean, I would never want my parents telling me who and when I should marry. Well, fast forward a little bit. After raising four kids, I've come to realize this idea is not as preposterous to me as it once seemed. Thankfully, my three married kids have chosen wisely. But after a couple of near misses, I now understand why parents were once involved. The ancients were a lot smarter than we gave them credit for. In Corinth, it was a father who chose his daughter's mate and then set the date. And here Paul is saying to the dads, if your princess is aging, if her best years are fleeting, if you seem to be holding her back and she wants to marry, well then let her. There's nothing wrong with a gal getting married. He does not sin, let them marry. Verse 37, nevertheless, he who stands steadfast in his heart, having no necessity, but has power over his own will, and has so determined in his heart that he will keep his virgin, does well. So then, he who gives her in marriage does well, but he who does not give her in marriage does better. Again, Paul is sticking to the theme he's been trumpeting throughout this passage. Because of the present distress, because of the distracting cares of marriage, if a person has the self-control, if they have the God-given calling to fly solo and to be singly devoted to Jesus, then great. They're better off being unmarried. But if they choose to be married, it's not a sin. Let them marry. Did you hear about the wedding at the bride's house? It started right at 6:45. But the host forgot one important detail. For just as the pastor popped the question, do you take this man to be your lawfully wedded husband? The clock right above the wedding party, a little bird slid from the mouth of the clock just overhead of the bride and groom and sounded, cuckoo, cuckoo, seven hilarious cuckoos. And that sums up Paul's take on marriage right there. If you're not called to marriage, if you don't need it, then why be cuckoo? And forego your freedom. Serve God without distractions. Just be single for the Savior. It's great. In conclusion, Paul answers a last question, verses 39 to 40 posed by the Corinthians, that obviously dealt with singles who were formerly married but were now widows or widowers. He states, a wife is bound by law as long as her husband lives. But if her husband dies, she is at liberty to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. A husband's death frees his wife from any marital obligations. If your spouse dies, you're free from any obligation to that person. You're free to remarry, and it can be a good thing, as long as it's in the Lord, which means to another Christian. That's the one stipulation. And yet, even here, Paul adds a caveat. He says, but she is happier if she remains as she is, according to my judgment, and I think I also have the Spirit of God. Once more, for reasons stated earlier, unless God has called her to remarry, then she might just be happier single. Like the credit card, singleness has its privileges. God calls some of us to be single. He calls some of us to marry. Our job is to bloom where we've been planted. Whatever your status, do all that you do to the glory of God.
Thanks for joining Pastor Sandy in this in-depth verse-by-verse study of the Apostle Paul's letters to the Corinthians. These two books dive into Paul's passion about how the church should conduct itself and the issues that followers of Christ will encounter. Paul's message is applicable today. You'll face challenges while you walk with Jesus too. Take the lessons the Corinthian church had to learn and make them your own. After all, history always has something to teach us. If you'd like to hear more messages from this in-depth study of 1 and 2 Corinthians, you can find them online at sandyadams.org. You can also take all of Pastor Sandy's teachings on the go when you download our mobile app. This is a great way to study God's Word as you go through life and could be an excellent opportunity to listen with friends and family. Find a link at sandyadams.org or search for Sandy Adams in your app store. Are you listening today in Atlanta? If so, you're invited to join us this weekend at Calvary Chapel Stone Mountain. Come listen to Pastor Sandy teach in person and meet some friendly and passionate people. We meet at 9:30 and 11:15 a.m. each Sunday. You can find all the information you need at sandyadams.org. That's all for today. Join us next time for another edition of Sandy Adams Radio.